Alan Hay, Reel 17.
We were talking about the handover of the Cossacks. What did you actually see of it yourself, if you see what I mean?
Well, I saw them being dismounted because our men had to take the horses to a separate place.
Did they object at all?
Oh, no. There was always some emotion from them. But they were then put into form twos and going in, but they were offering gifts all the way along, and I was just standing watching them going into the cage, and one man in really good English said, he looked at my boots, my riding boots, which were Yugoslav made boots, but I got them because they were better for riding. And he looked, he said, "I will make you some leather boots." He was going at the cage. I said, "You have, I have the material. I make the boots for you." I said, "I'll see you later," knowing I was never going to, probably never see him. But this is when we got the Hungarian band through our hands, and where they come out, I don't know. But they were struck up the music, and at nights they were singing in the cages.
So they were happy enough?
Well, happy at that stage, yes.
But then what happened?
Well, they were then taken in trucks, thinking they were going to Italy. And I've only read the reports since. Our supporting gunners were in charge of taking them by trucks to railhead, and whereas they thought they were going to Italy, they were taken back into Italy.
So when you saw them, there was no trouble because they were happy enough.
Happy, yeah. No trouble at all.
And you did you know what was happening to them?
No.
So that was a different situation for you.
It was just some time later when all this was over. The Russians said there were 20,000 horses short. I thought, well, I can account for 100 or so, but 20,000 was a bit much. But they were making a big show of us cheating them out of 20,000. After we got rid of the horses and the Croatian, we had to settle down to patrolling.
That you mean the Russians, not the Croatians? Sorry, the Cossacks.
We used the horses we had for patrolling because we had to pick up the people who have escaped in the woods. But at that time, the 46th Division was instructed from higher above to take stock what had happened, what particularly about the prisoners of war taken, and so there was a conference. Whilst we were, I think it was down to captain level at the start, and I was given the remit of speaking about the regimental brigade. Well, we didn't have a regimental brigade engaged there. The Hampshires had a regimental brigade, you know, which we weren't in Ireland, but somebody wanted to know about the regimental brigade. But having known the regimental brigade in my own time, I spoke about this, and that was all right. A fellow who was at the conference with me had to speak about education in the army. He was a Scotsman with a big mouth, and he spoiled everything by, he said something about all regular officers he'd found in the army were mental bankrupts. So he went on, "You were allowed to say what you wanted." So he wasn't asked. But then I was asked to go on to another conference, an area conference going on from there, where there was an open forum. And I said, "What about these civilians that were treated so badly, and which we subsequently found out were killed in Yugoslavia?" And whoever was in charge said, "That is not up for discussion." I said, "But how can it not be up for discussion when this is a conference where we're told we can say anything we like? We're and we speak politely and don't abuse the, and especially don't abuse any section on it. And I said, but this is very, very much part of what we were in. I said, we were actually up in it and we saw this happening. And I said, it's not up for discussion, and closed it. And this riled me. Shortly after this, a notice came to my battalion say that I had to go on a model rearmament course. And this was in Italy. And so I said, I discussed this. I said, I have nothing to do with model rearmament. And said, well, you're specifically mentioned by the general. So I said, well, I'm just not going. So the word went back to the general, and he sent for me. He said, look, he said, this is your chance to say what you were saying in the conference. He said, I know you're a bit grieved. And I said, nothing could be done for you, but he said, this will give you a chance to say what you have if you go to this course. So this was at a place called Assisi, and there was another young man from the artillery with me. So we got into a 1500, it was going to be a long journey, and when we got to the south of Austria, at Klagenfurt, we stopped because there was an officer's club, and we thought we had lunch. I'm only saying it because it's a and they were closing the officers' club that night, and there was to be a big party, so we stayed overnight. So the next day we were in a poor shape, and we went down towards Assisi and asking people where this conference was. It was an educational conference. Where it was. They said they didn't know. Your best plan would be to go to the basilica and asked there. So when we got to the basilica in Assisi, I went in there where I saw there was an army information office. I said, where is this education conference? I said, this is it. It was the Padre Center, and then we were in the top of the name. Now, there were two thirds Padres and one third people like myself. And I found they just tried to brainwash me.
What type of thing was the course about? I'm really...
Well, they said they were looking for leaders because I wasn't a professional soldier. I was going to take some part in life when I got home. And because I'd been very specific in some of my views, they thought...
What type of thing?
Well, obviously moral, based on moral behaviour.
Because of the question you'd ask. Yes. And how are they trying to brainwash you? What sort of thing?
Well, it was Christianity. Well, I must say I had no use for the course from the word, or I hadn't wanted to go. There were some really nice people there. I got friendly with a fellow called Wood, whom I found I could talk to, and we wanted to others, and he was great, but I wasn't interested in the religious side of life in particular. I'd been training as an accountant before I joined up. Anyhow, I got on very well with him, and he subsequently became Dean of Windsor and a Bishop of Norwich or something like that. So he's a nice chap, but that's the only thing I got out of that course was that I enjoyed talking to him. But they got not specifically onto the morals of what we did with people at the end of the war.
And what did they say? Nothing that helps you.
Nothing that helped me. So I was there for a fortnight, but in the meantime, I must say it wasn't empty because they took us across to Perugia, which was just on the other side of the valley, which I had been when we were moving up Italy, and I'd gone there to meet up with the Irish horse, the tax, and to find out how we worked. Incidentally, the Irish horse never reached us. They're mentioned in the book, but they never got beyond this brick wall, or stone wall. Anyhow, Perugia, I saw they were forming some formation, colour formation courses for the army. I had a good look around there. I went to the art gallery, learned about the Umbrian art, and, but these were just things in with the course. I didn't feel intellectually I was up to some of the things, and so I was really glad to get back to my unit. But it didn't do me any good. But I nobody wanted to know about what happened to the Croats and the Cossacks. So after the war, I was looking for anything that told me. I've got masses of stuff that I've gleaned from here, there, in the libraries, but nobody records it.
Well, I hope we've done a bit more of recording of it now. Now, what was the next thing that happened? You got, where was the battalion when you rejoined them? Had they moved up to Wildon yet, or? Because you'd been at Bruchel when you left.
Yes. Obviously, the Russians had come too far down, and they were occupying this area called Styria, and they weren't prepared to move back at all. So we were busy doing our patrolling and looking for these people who call themselves werewolves, and
German,
and we picked up one.
They're extreme SS type, yeah, sort of thing. Yeah. Were they doing anything? I mean, or were they just evading?
They were forcing us, farmers and landowners, which there were some of them, and we were in the patrolling. There was one of our young officers had come across this farm. And they were looking around and said, I'm sure they had prisoners of war there, and we've seen signs. So he said, we'll go back again. Anyhow, he went back, and this fellow, this camp, asked us to have a meal with them. And by the time, having chatted to him about this, that they were pretty suspicious. And so we got the people, the SIS or something, this secret police, to go and visit. And yes, he had been a werewolf, and he had a tattoo. And so it was just doing a job.
Now, was this round Bruchel, or had you moved up to Wildon?
We moved up to Wildon.
And Wildon was in Styria.
In Styria, yes.
Where were you billeted at Wildon?
Called Schwarzenegg. It was a couple of miles out of the village. The battalion headquarters was in Wildon, and headquarter company, but we had the better village. It was a nice place, and we were worried about the family. I allowed the family to have two or three rooms. It was quite a big place. The count was German, and he had been kicked out by Hermann Göring, who had the next estate to his. And Hermann Göring wanted his estate, so he'd come to Austria. And he said, now I'm in trouble here because I'm a German, and they will come and get me sometime. He said, I've been away once. And he said, you very kindly let me stay. I've met up with two of my daughters in here. Anyhow, they took him away again, but the old lady and the two daughters were still there.
So, and you were doing this patrolling based on Wildon. What was your sort of, what other duties did the DLI have in the area?
Well, as time got on, we were selected to go to Vienna. Because, as you know, Austria was divided into four zones, American, Russian, ourselves, the control of Vienna, the central part of Vienna, was to be held by each power in turn. And when it came to the turn of the British, each power put one battalion in for guard duties in Southern Germany, and our battalion was selected.
I believe you were actually re-equipped with everything.
Yes, so we all got new uniforms and we really smartened up and started to drill, and we went to Vienna, which was in quite a mess. The roads had lots of rubble. Russians with their carts were parading about. It really hadn't got back to any sort of civilian status. We were put in a hospital.
This is October 45, isn't
it? Yeah. Before the snows came. And we were to do ceremonial. One of the main things was to guard the bank, which contained the new Austrian currency. I think this was about the only significant thing I remember. And every night, with the other three representatives of the other three powers, we had to go along, open the box, and let them see that the Russian, the Austrian, which was in the country. There was a big ceremony to take over from the Americans, and I got the main parade to do, where they were opening the first four power conference in Austria. They had one, of course, in Berlin, but we were going to have another in Berlin.
Vienna.
So it was difficult to get 100. They had a number of 100. It was difficult to get them because everybody was on guard duties doing this, that, and the other. We didn't have that many men.
They were guarding public buildings.
Yes. It was a special thing. But at least one thing we had to be particular about was to see there was no looting of these pretty buildings with all their paintings, and I can see that the Russians didn't strip them. The Russians, when we were moving them back from lower down Syria, they were taking the glass out of the windows, they were loading their carts, they had bedding and everything they could carry from these houses. So they were really stripping things. In fact, when I got into my schloss in one of the main rooms down below, it was littered with really nice pewter. And they just chucked them here and there. They were looking for clothing and bedding. They weren't interested in pewter.
Now, you were telling me about this special parade where you had to hit 100 men.
Yes. So, that, as I say, they were guarding other things around the city, so the Russians weren't pinching them. We drilled, and I got all the men sized up, and we got a couple of bands together. We didn't have any rehearsals apart from just the drill and what else, that these figures would come and they'd be next to the arms, the national anthems would be played for them. And I really did went to an awful lot of trouble to size these men under Subarna passage.
What do you mean by size?
Well, that we didn't have a tall one standing next to a small one. And so on the day of the parade, the chief soldier in Vienna, Brigadier Palmer, said no, he didn't want the men lying there, he wanted them lying here, which were over the old tram line. So when my men lined up over the old tram lines in a rough bit of road, the line was wavy, and I was furious. I said, well, we'll give them, you will put them over the tram lines, because I want these people to come here, he that organised the official part, where the vehicles would come, and they would come and inspect, and so anyhow, how things go wrong. So that went extremely well, and we had a parade, and
How did you get on with the Russians in the town, in Vienna?
Not at all. The main British zone was outside Vienna, and we had to go through part of the Russian zone to get there, because they had a marvellous hotel called the Park Hotel, and it was the one where all the British, there was a British atmosphere. We used to go at times into the famous Sarkis Hotel, which had opened, where they hadn't opened the famous cocktail bar because the Russians had put their horses in there. I don't know if you know about Sarkis Hotel. Madame Sarka, who entertained royalty from all parts of the world, she used to get them to sign a tablecloth, and she needleworked all their signatures, and it was on the wall of her office in a big glass case. Royalty from going back all over, that was still there. The Russians had that. So we used to see that. But the cocktail bar was not in the room, but they had got the dining room organized, and it used to be flooded with Russians who were quite uncouth.
In what way?
In their behavior. Sarkis was one of the leading world hotels, and there were still some people who were trying to get it back to what it was, but the Russians used it as a cookhouse, as a meeting place, and the smoking, and they were quite rude, and so we didn't use it much, except if any good dignitaries came, and there were plenty of dignitaries came, from archbishops to cabinet ministers visiting, and they would like the opportunity to come.
Was there any tension with the Russians?
Not tension, but they would not let us do anything without their agreement. Now then, when I was in Vienna, they had a committee all out, and there was a very good stadium there, and a fellow from the Scottish regiment came, Bruce Lockhart, London Scottish, yes. He said, look, he said, we're very interested in playing rugby. He said, we could get a rugby team together, and we'd like to play on the stadium. He said, they'd play one or two football matches. He said, we'd like to, he wasn't in there, he was outside. So I said, well, yes, well, I'll put that forward. And the Russians wouldn't have anything to do with it. So the next meeting I said, well, my fellows don't like your refusal, we're going to stop the football matches. What's this rugby? So they said, can Russian play it? I said, I don't think so. So anyhow, we talked them over, and I said to Bruce Lockhart, I said, well, I've had a lot of trouble getting this rugby match. I said, on really one main condition. I said, well, I have a fellow company commander called Darcy Steve, who played, he got a blue at Cambridge. I said, he would want to be on. And I said, seeing I've arranged this, and I've arranged rugby matches from my battalion here, there, and everywhere, I want to be on. Right. So I find myself playing in this match alongside his brother, Bruce Lockhart, who played for Scotland. Famous name. Anyhow, these are just the same. But the Russians didn't want us to play rugby. And of course, we had to, they wouldn't allow us to go through their sector to get the main sector. As I say, there wasn't a sociable atmosphere in Vienna itself. They were nosing the way to everything. So we used to go to this Park Hotel. But it was a long way around, and it was far better to go through the Russian zone. And of course, we used to go through the Russian zone. But they did all sorts of things to stop us to have carts across the road, and we would have taken this time, because we're daft enough, having got some vino into us, to say, we haven't been drinking lamp oil, we've been drinking... These will be my children, they probably couldn't have said, but they just knew we were being looked. Anyhow, but otherwise, no, they were very stuffy.
What about the Americans and the French? Did you, you know, their sectors and their troops?
We didn't see anything of them because we weren't bordering their sectors.
What about other entertainments while you were in Vienna? Was there much for you and the troops?
Yes, there were some very, very good concerts. Obviously, people were bored and stiff, but they did put on their old gear, evening dress and so on, and we were grateful that we had got that going. The Russians weren't keen, but when we got in, we started to get things opened up a bit, and we were very grateful for that. The French and Americans, of course, supported us.
What about fraternisation with the Austrians? Was that allowed?
No, it wasn't allowed.
Did it go on, though?
Yes, a bit, obviously. I've forgotten when it came off, of course. I remember as we were moving up from Brugge to Boulogne, we stopped at a little place, a little village, right place on a hill with its church, as I remember it. And there was a school teacher there, and we were using the school classrooms. They had put me into the party house. I thought I'd go over and look at the scooter. But we weren't allowed to open the desk before. She was a nice woman. She had a friend and quickly got her friend to come along because we supplied her with some chocolate and a little bit of goodies. But that was the only fraternization we got on.
What about the black market? Did any of the officers, NCOs or men engage in that? Because there was quite a thriving black market certainly in Vienna, but perhaps
no,
in Wilm.
No, we didn't have time for it and we couldn't.
You were unaware of it. Anything else about your time in Vienna before? Because I think you went back to Wilden, didn't you?
Yes. I was, by that time, troops were going on leave. I had been sent, I should say, it wasn't all bad going on this moral rearmament. I did get some leave down in Italy at the Lido in Venice. That was where I didn't particularly want to go because I was settling down to the life in my Schloss, doing a lot of riding and visiting the other Schlosses, and we had parties. And
it sounds quite a pleasant life in Wilden.
Oh, it was, and of course, the fan headquarters had parties. I think the fraternization was off then because we had constant parties again, Austrian constant parties, all mixing, and we set these people up for the people. It's very good. They did envy me my Schloss. It was about 2 miles out of the town, so it was a bit of a walk. But we had pretty good facilities then. When I ultimately went on leave, which I rather cheated about because I thought I'd like to go home for Christmas.
Hang on, just before we get to that. Had you been involved in the setting up of the magazine that was produced for the battalion? I think the Geordie, was it? Or?
I had nothing whatsoever to do with setting up, but I did say I'd make a contribution. And so my contribution was around the stables. That was when I was talking about the horses. And it was a good effort. Major Springer set it up when we had. But I really didn't.
And the battalion history, had that started to be produced then?
No.
Right.
Largely because things were settling down. When I was asked about my future, I said, well, I'll just go home when it's necessary. They said, well, they didn't think the battalion was going to last that much longer, but they would like me to stay until the end. And I said, well, I'll stay until the end, but even if it goes past the day for providing, you let me go home on leave for Christmas. So
that was the deal you'd worked. What about your leave at Christmas? What do you remember of that?
Well, I got my leave and I was put in charge of a train, and was long way down, right into Italy. Stayed overnight in Italy.